Hello, and welcome to the Pharmacy Society of Wisconsin's and Iowa Pharmacy Association's Emerging Leaders podcast series. This series is brought to you by the 2021 and 2022 Emerging Leaders Group from PSW and IPA. This podcast is designed for leaders at all levels as part of a lifelong process of developing leadership skills. Throughout the series, we will discuss leadership hot topics from imposter syndrome to disruptive innovation. My name is Dan Funk, and I am a fourth-year pharmacy student with PSW. Today, we are joined by Dr. Matthew Wittry and Dr. Demi Sokol, and we are going to discuss health disparities. Our first guest, Dr. Matthew Wittry, is an assistant professor at the University of Iowa College of Pharmacy in the Division of Health Services Research. Dr. Wittry's research focuses on patient-centered communication, including in the community pharmacy setting. He teaches on patient-centered topics, including social determinants of health, health disparities and outcomes, motivational interviewing, and challenging communication topics like vaccine hesitancy and suicide prevention. Our second guest, Dr. Demi Sokol, completed her PharmD from UW-Madison in 2013 and then pursued her residency through the Community Pharmacy Residency Program at UW-Madison School of Pharmacy, where she gained experience with medication therapy management. She started working with Hyatt Pharmacy in Milwaukee after completing her residency in 2014 and has been an integral part of the clinical program at Hyatt. Demi is also a certified diabetes care and education specialist. Welcome, Matt and Demi. Thank you for being here today. Now, as I mentioned, today our topic of discussion is health disparities. So to start us off, Matt, I was wondering if you could tell us what you mean when we talk about health disparities and why they're important to consider and address.
Well, thanks, Dan. Health disparity is really any difference in health outcomes that can be attributed to I like to think of it as the systematic factors, including the social determinants of health, that can really lead, you know, a person that has a lot of economic stability to have better health outcomes than someone that has a shakier economic foundation. And so all those things can contribute to differences in, you know, mortality would be the big one, but things like blood pressure control, medication adherence, there's a lot of differences, that can lead to differences in health outcomes. So we call those the, you know, health disparities when we think that it's not just some random difference. You know, obviously people have different genetic differences, but a lot when I think of disparities gets back to the, you know, is there some factor that's contributing to that difference? And so something that I think Demi will be able to shed a lot of light on in her role at Hyatt Pharmacy is all the social determinants of health that end up impacting the health outcomes of her patients, and how Hyatt Pharmacy, I think, very uniquely works to support patients, who have disadvantages, related to their social determinants of health, really to no fault of their own, just of circumstance. So with that, I'd love to have Demi introduce her role at Hyatt Pharmacy, and then I've got a few follow-up questions about what she does and the impact that she makes.
Sure. Thank you, Dan and Matt. I definitely want to first kind of lay a little background in terms of what my role has been at Hyatt. So I started here in 2014, and since then it's been purely being present out in the community, being it from organizing events, health education topic events, or health fairs with local pair partners or community health workers or different community-based organizations, to multiple other areas where we're trying to connect with patients who are limited on access to resources. So I think my role has been more like having that community presence and having Hyatt get into those partnerships. And this is going back from 2014. So they've been able to set up health topic, as I mentioned earlier, education clinics. And it's been my role to kind of evolved into this spot where it's totally community presence and it's no dispensing, like being in the workflow versus being kind of working or partnering up with payers, for example, where how can a pharmacist impact your patient's compliance, your health outcomes. And through that, we've also kind of expanded on our home visit program where we're going into patients' homes. And that's where we noticed we were making the most impact, like meeting them where the patients were at. And definitely with that, kind of intrigued me on how you are discovering so much more when you're going into a patient's home. It's not just their medications, but so many other factors that can impact their health outcomes. So like going into their homes, you're noticing on how, you know, their living condition is and kind of delving into the topic that Matt mentioned, where there are so many factors that can impact their health. It's not just medications. Being a pharmacist, I really care about, are you taking your meds? But what are the other steps they have to cross before they get to the medications? So factors like, you know, do they have access to food? Do they have access to housing? And all those things that we're going to talk about today in terms of the factors that have contributed. So I think over the past years, I've learned a lot about public health aspect that can be impacted by a pharmacist. And that's where I have grown into. And Hyatt has definitely had a very, very immense presence in Milwaukee because of our partnerships with the community organizations and groups to be able to impact the local population in terms of health. And of course, parts of it has to be medications, but there's definitely more to it beyond medications.
Great, Demi. I want to pick up on, you talked about community partners and someone's social and community context is one of our five main social determinants of health. So who do you work with to make this impact to people in their communities?
Right. So I think the key players, definitely, of course, pharmacists is one of them, the patients, caregivers, patients, community health workers, or if they do not have a community health worker, how can we connect them with one if there are barriers to help and they do need that extra support? I think that's been one of our key partners where we've been able to work with a lot of the organizations that have trained community health workers, local practices, federally qualified health centers. There are peers who are very, very well, they have a very strong presence in the community also to be able to support their patient population. So those are some of the key members or key partners that we've worked with in order to be able to kind of expand our role from medications to be able to make those impact also.
Great. So I want to hear more about these home visits. So tell us more about that. What might a pharmacist see when they visit someone in their home? I know you've mentioned a few things already, but can you give some more concrete examples about recommendations that you've made for patients?
Right. So of course, when we started home visits, it was definitely like because of a pharmacist going into a patient's home to provide a comprehensive medication review. But as a pharmacist, we're not just trained on medications. We're trained on lifestyle changes. We're trained on their social status. We're trained on what are the barriers to be able to get access to healthcare. So I think that's where we've been able to touch on when we're going into patients' homes. We're looking at, okay, what do you have access to drinking water? Do you have a broken window? And being in a state like Wisconsin, if you do have that, is definitely something that's not a safe living condition. So definitely those are some of the things that I have noticed. There are patients who are just so anxious. And I'm like, when you try to talk to them and ask them, okay, what's going on, Ms. Smith? Why are you so worried today? She's like, oh, because my ride is not on time. That means I would miss my doctor's visit. which means that the doctor is going to discharge me from his practice because I'm going to miss my visit. And I'm like, well, what time is your appointment? And it's probably at 11 a.m. when I'm talking to her. Appointment's not till 3, but she's already getting that anxiety and nervousness to make sure that she makes it on time, because transportation is a huge problem, especially in a city like Milwaukee, where patients have to plan their whole day to be able to go out to the doctor's visit. So some of these things that I started noticing early on when I started practicing in Milwaukee was just eye-opening for me, because I could never imagine like a person having an appointment later in the day is already worried about getting there early in the morning, because they know transportation is going to be a problem. If they miss the ride, that means they're to miss their doctor's visit. And even like talking to her, like, okay, what time are you going to be back? If I have a follow-up, what time can I call you? She said, do not call me today, because even if her appointment gets done by 3:34, she probably wouldn't make it back home by 6:30 because of that delay. So those are a few things that we learn and we talk about when we're at patients' homes. And it definitely has changed the way and the perspective with which I talk to my patients now, because it's not just that you're focusing on medications, you're asking them all these other questions that can bigger picture impact my patient's attention span and focus to what I'm talking to them, right? Because if they're not worried about, how are they going to worry about their medications if they're more, if they have all these other things going on in the background about transportation, about their electricity bill or a broken window and things like that. So I think all these are the little things that I've learned as we go to patients' homes, and definitely change with the way I practice.
For sure. And I can imagine another community pharmacist that only was doing CMRs, in the pharmacy, in the private office, that type of stuff just wouldn't come up. I mean, people probably aren't going to volunteer that unless they're asked, or unless you observe it directly in their home.
Right.
What guiding principles, you've already mentioned this idea of, people having, anxiety and transportation issues, but what do you think you've learned about interacting with people that's changed given your ability to go into their homes and seeing them in their real lives?
Sure. I think over the last few years of me practicing with the patients, I have seen how the patients that I've worked with longitudinally, or we have worked with, have been exposed to the whole concept of what a pharmacist can do for them. And that trust and relationship. And in terms of what is the education or knowledge we are imparting into our patients. So like educating them about resources, educating them about importance of a doctor's appointment, importance of establishing a primary care doctor, and how to have that relationship with your team in order to have a better health outcome. Because if you have that transitional relationship with a prescriber and you lose contact or you are discharged from their practice, that's a huge hit on a patient, because they were established and all of a sudden, because they missed an appointment because of a barrier to transportation, or they had a death in the family with the practice did not understand, now they're set back because they lost that primary care doctor. And now they're going to rely on urgent care as their primary care prescriber to be able to get the medications back, or, all those little things that were already established. So I think that is something that's very, very important for us to be able to like keep delivering to our patients, like educate them on, what is important about their primary care doctor. Why do they need to see a primary care practitioner? Getting their labs done on time, getting access to their discharge summary, their hospital notes, all those little things.
Yeah. I mean, this is very different than the drug therapy problems that I remember being taught in pharmacy school. I mean, to me, this is just a different level of focus and care. What other social determinants of health do you think are often missed, but that would have a big impact on health disparities?
I think we kind of talked about transportation, definitely. You know, I think the other one thing that I have really learned a lot about is also access to food, and just security in terms of, am I going to have my meal tonight or, you know, tomorrow, and all those little things. And I think working with a lot of patients who have diabetes and suffer from metabolic disorder, that's a big factor. And that's part of our education as a pharmacist when we're training them and educating them about lifestyle changes. Like, you know, you should not be eating fried food. You should not be, you know, drinking soda. But then what is the solution that we're offering to them? Or are we even giving them another option? So I think that's what we've learned. And being in Milwaukee, I think another thing that I've learned is there is so many resources. There are so many food pantries a block away from our patients that they don't even know about. And I think as a pharmacy, we are a great reservoir of all those little information pieces that are available to us through different partners and be able to give access to the patients. Like the one patient that I was visiting, I know that was a food pantry because we had organized a vaccination clinic there. And I was able to tell the patient that, hey, there is a food pantry just a block down from your home. Why don't you go there every Friday and grab fresh fruits and vegetables that they have? They have like a lot of things that they give out. Why don't you go grab it? And then once they learned about it, they were able to like establish, you know, that relationship with the food pantry, go in there weekly and be able to get access to food, of course. So I think that's another thing that I learned. Of course, co-pays, that's also something that as pharmacists, we think it's easy for our patients to get access to, but that's something that I learned. It's not easy. Like even a dollar could mean something that they have to plan and put in their, you know, income in terms of, are they going to be able to get that? And how can they get access to medications if they do not have that copay? So just kind of working with the patient, educating them, getting them connected to the resources that are available. I think pharmacies can do a lot more, not just pharmacists, but also technicians by training them about these different resources, training our technicians as community health workers. And I know Pharmacy Ideal Wisconsin has been taking a lot of initiative in terms of expanding the role of technicians under these community health workers. I think that's something that pharmacies can do a lot more. That is one area that pharmacies can do a lot more in.
Definitely. How do you see, you know, technicians and community health workers bringing, you know, them into the team? How do you see that, you know, pharmacy's also been talking a lot about, you know, diversity and inclusion. Mm-hmm. How do you think that can, you know, your team model contributes to that goal?
Sure. I think, of course, technicians are very well trained on dispensing medications. They do great, like, but then there are many more things the technicians can do. So there's two parts to your question. I think one would definitely be not to neglect or ignore any kind of flag that could be raised by something that the patient mentions on the phone, right? So if they said something where they do not want their medications, trying to ask more questions and kind of getting into why they did not get their medication or was something going on and trying to get to the bottom of the situation. And the other part is also the training for these technicians and what kind of technicians are on your team. Again, going back to specifically practice where I'm at in Hyatt, there's a lot of patients with different cultural backgrounds, different languages that they speak. And a lot of times the level where they're convinced to take their medication or how dedicated they are to their health and even willing to talk about their health depends on who the person is on the opposite side. Does that person understand what the patient's saying? Is the patient hesitant to share the concern they have? Are they thinking like the opposite person's not interested in listening to me? That comfort level, the trust. And that's where I think technicians really have to work on to be able to, even if I don't speak your language, how can you look into my eyes and trust me and tell me what your problem is about your health condition? if you have been feeling tired for the last 6 months, there was a patient from a Rohingya community. She was not feeling great. She kept losing weight. She's older, very tired all day. And because of that conversation with our pharmacist, we had her son go to see the doctor, found out that her sugar's been high 300s, 400s, super life-threatening condition that she was living in. She was a diabetic. She had moved here to this country, did not know how to see a doctor, did not know how to tell her or explain her problem because she does not speak the language. She was in DKA. She was given the treatment inpatient, discharged on insulin. She's home now. She knows what her problem was and she's being treated. So I think that's like a very extreme example, but there are so many, several of other examples that how can you make your patient feel comfortable even though you don't speak their language and they can trust you and share your problem, even if it's to a translator. That is, I think, a key point where we have to get our technicians to. And it's a hard conversation. A lot of times I would see a technician who would just hang up without asking more questions. And it's like, why didn't you ask this other question? It's like just training and coaching them in terms of how could we have made this conversation more productive or more helpful for our patient, because they really rely on us for not just medications. There's a lot more we can do for them. So I think that's probably just if like how technicians and pharmacists should be aiming to help patients from different cultural backgrounds.
Yeah, I think that's a neat premise that, you know, whether you're a pharmacist or a technician, you know, that your ears are open and that you're kind of poised to listen and and figure out, you know, what's the referral, what's the next step. So I gotta talk about COVID because it's timely. And I know that you know that Hyatt pharmacies, you know, administer a lot of vaccinations and provides testing. Where do you see your pharmacy, you know, working to reduce the, because you also hear in the news a lot about the disparity in testing access and vaccine access. What have you experienced?
For sure. Of course, it's been a lot of ups and downs, a lot of learning for everyone, not just pharmacists, but a lot of public health workers, health departments, local health departments, state health department. So I think with our state, I think the state did a great job making a lot of initiatives, a lot of opportunities available. I think there was a lot of learning, of course. I've been a part of Immunize Milwaukee, which is a work group on which we have several representatives from the health departments, from local pharmacies. So I was one of the pharmacists on the work group where, and then of course there were health systems on the call, payer partners on the call. And the discussion is about what is missing, what's lacking, and how can we prepare? What is coming, how can we prepare, and how can we plan? So I think my takeaway from those meetings were how Milwaukee really struggled initially in terms of getting the vaccine to the inner city. So the delivery of the vaccine, right? The access. The next part was, okay, now it is accessible, it's available. How do we get people to take it? So that's when we started learning about vaccine hesitancy, right? And then there was discussion, and then how we got it to them, there was access, we had it available. Those discussions about vaccine hesitancy, having people talk about it. There's been, so you know, there were like, we have done thousands of vaccine clinics, like we've been present in the inner city of Milwaukee, but even if, till date, if you look at, and I was looking at it this morning, there are still areas in the inner city of Milwaukee that are very low vaccination rates. And of course, access is not a problem anymore. And I think we have to kind of keep addressing different issues where it is trust. It could be, I mean, I don't know if I can pinpoint to a specific area, but definitely the hesitancy is because of lack of trust, and how can we work on that and I think the religious groups, a lot of churches, local churches have done clinics, organized clinics within the churches where they have brought people in, where, you know, the leader of the group would get the vaccine or the booster and encourage other members. So I have seen a lot more intake because of that, because that's where they're comfortable. They know that group and they're willing to go in. There is a lot of, you know, segments or areas where there is, you know, Hispanic community, and they have their own specific spots that they're comfortable to go in. It's a religious group. It's a community center. They feel comfortable. They feel they belong there. And if they go in there and there is a healthcare practitioner who talks like them, speaks to them in their language, looks like them, it's easier for them to strike that conversation. And sometimes they would ask, like, which one should I take, Pfizer or Moderna? Does that work? Should I just take, I mean, they're asking questions that they were very hesitant because they probably thought this opposite person might make fun of me because that shouldn't be a question. But deep down, that is a question they've had for months and nobody's answered it for them. So I think answering those questions and just telling them that this would work and you have to do this for us to get out of this pandemic. And I think it works. It's just about being in the right place, the right time, and giving those patients the right piece of information from people who they trust versus somebody who they have never seen. Because if I go in and I talk to them, they probably wouldn't trust me versus the person who they have seen and they've trusted and they've learned from them. I think that's been one of the strategies that is something that we're trying to adapt to, but we're still not where we should be in Milwaukee. There is still a lot more work to do in terms of COVID vaccine, but I think we'll keep, you know, being available for the clinics. We have been organizing a lot of vaccine clinics. We have been utilizing a lot of translators for local religious places, churches, community groups. We have a specific church for Burmese community. They're also very kind of introverted group where they only, you know, kind of love to go to their own church. They would only like to get the vaccine in their own church. So there's a lot of those little things that we have to plan and think. And there's definitely a more uptake when they're comfortable in that space is the bottom line. So, and I know city and the state is definitely making a lot of initiatives and a lot of grant funded projects that are going on in our state to be able to help the vaccinators sustain those efforts and keep providing access to the vaccine to the local population.
Yeah, that's, you know, that makes, from, you know, what everything that I hear, you know, engaging, partnering with the local community instead of just broadcasting, you know, broad messages, you know, that might likely be unlike, you know, won't land. What would you, kind of as we maybe wrap up, what would you recommend, you know, what do you think pharmacists can do, you know, this week or, you know, this month? You know, maybe their pharmacy isn't, you know, hasn't rolled out, you know, a service delivery model like Hyatt, but, you know, what do you think pharmacists can do, you know, as a first step? To, you know, to impact social to make a difference on social determinants of health and ultimately, you know, some of those disparities that we see.
Of course, I think there's a lot of things that can be done. And of course, every practice is different, considering where you are geographically, what your patient base is, who your staff is. I think every practice is unique and different, and what works for some practice might not work for the other practice. But I think as we are in this group effort of making our profession diverse, making our profession strong, and, you know, get access or expand our role in healthcare team, having that presence is very important. So collaboration is very, very important. Gone are those days where a pharmacist could stand behind their screen and just dispense. We have to just break out of that role, make those phone calls, talk to the health department, because public health is a huge area that we impact, and we cannot be out of that team. We have to be on those health department calls. Health department needs to know that this is a pharmacist down the street. If I call them, they would solve our problem, and they need us. They need us for not just COVID. They need us for other public health areas that are that they struggle with, and pharmacists can play a huge role in that. And I think the one thing that I would recommend our colleagues is to kind of collaborate with your local health department. Tell them that you're there and you can make an impact on the health outcomes for their region. Tell them that there are services that we can do that would impact the health. That is definitely one area. But of course, internally, having that staff that is willing to take that, because I think a lot of the pharmacists, a lot of us technicians are trained to dispense. That's great, but we need to step up and we need to take more in order for us to be seen as a healthcare provider. We can't just keep, you know, doing those things. So I think having those opportunities for your technicians, if they want to learn something, give them that opportunity. And I think that's something that I really admire about a lot of organizations where technicians are not just technicians. They're taking roles like managers, operation manager, or, you know, they're working collaboratively with other departments and designing new projects to help with efficiency in a pharmacy and be able to represent not just a little piece of their job, but so much more that technicians can do. So I think empowering each and every member in a pharmacy team and giving them a goal of like, how can we overall impact these public health outcomes is something that is probably the way to go and think of us as future of our profession.
Definitely. You know, something that I just wanted to amplify because it resonates with what I teach my students at Iowa is just, you know, that someone's health and medication experience is not just the drug, you know, like what you said about food security. And, you know, so if you think about what's impacting someone's diabetes outcomes, you know, yes, they need to be adherent to their medicines, but, you know, all those other details about their lives is going to impact and ultimately their outcomes. So being curious and open, you know, to see what the patient's experiencing and what they're dealing with and what they think is meaningful, you know, because what I also tell my patient, my students is, you know, you can't control the patient when they go home. And so you got to do your best to figure out what you can. And while the patient's there in the pharmacy or maybe in a home visit or on the telephone, you know, to try to send them off with some empowerment to make their own choices that will be, you know, conducive to their health.
I agree. It's a partnership and they got to feel they belong. They got to feel that this is a part of their healthcare team. And that's how they open up and ask us for solutions to their problems.
Yeah. Cause you know, we know the pharmacist is expert in the drugs, but you know, the patient's an expert in a whole heck of a lot of their own health and life too.
Right.
All right. That is such great advice. I want to thank both of our guests, Matt and Demi, tonight. This has been such a great conversation. The PSW and IPA are so grateful for you providing. I know I can't wait to hear more in the future. If you have any questions for our guests tonight, please contact Erica Martin at PSW via her email, emartin@pswi.org. That's M-A-R-T-I-N. Or Emmeline Paintsill at IPA via her email, epaintsill@iarx.org. That's E-P-A-I-N-T-S-I-L. Keep tuning in to the Emerging Leaders podcast for more information and more important conversations for pharmacists and the pharmacy community. Thank you and see you next time.